We're down to the short list on the 2014 North American Car and Truck of the Year Award.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 214 for October 11th of 2013. The inside thinking on Car and Truck of the Year contenders. Watch Autoline After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time or 2200 GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or by following the links on our website. Want to thank everybody who's watching Autoline After Hours. We're doing something a little bit different. We've actually pre-recorded the show because I'm out of town when you're watching this. Decided to talk about the short list for the North American Car and Truck of the Year Award. And I've got three of my colleagues on that jury, Jim McCraw, Michelle Krebs, and Chris Pockert. And great to all have you here.
Thank you.
And now we got to figure out where we take this discussion. We've got 12 cars and 12 trucks. And
Well, I'm very busy, John, so I say the Chevrolet Corvette for car and the Silverado for pickup truck, and let's go.
Okay. You may think that way.
But we should talk about how big the list was to begin with, because we narrowed it down from...
I want to say that I counted 48 vehicles.
Which was less than last year.
Less than last year and the year before, you know, because that's one thing that has astonished me in the prior 2 years, probably more than the prior two, is there was over 52 vehicles, which means there's at least one new car or truck coming out every single week in the American market. That's the way this industry is just churning these things
out
there.
Don't you think that's somewhat reflective of, I mean, if you back time it to the bad times when GM and Chrysler were under enormous pressure, they had to cancel some things and move things around. Maybe that accounts in some way for the relative small size of this field.
Maybe.
And the GM dominance. I mean, the fact that GM is dominating the list is the fact that they postponed a lot of vehicles, and now they're just, there's this
the floodgates
of,
open.
Yes.
Well, as you guys know, it takes 3 years, let's say, to develop a vehicle. GM is just now 4 years out of bankruptcy, so the floodgates are opening. All this stuff, to your guys' point, where that was backed up, is now hitting the market.
Right.
Yeah, just for clarification, they've got three on truck and utility, and three on the car list, and that's unmatched among any of the other brands.
Right. A quarter of the nominees are from General Motors.
It's really remarkable, and in some bread and butter segments, you've got new trucks, you've got the Impala, which, you know, was a rental queen for how long? And is really shaping up to be an incredible product.
And the other thing, because, you know, over the last decade, it's all been so green this and so green that, electric cars, hybrid cars, plug-in cars. Not one made the final cut.
Although there are some that have hybrid versions.
Yeah.
But they're not pure, yes, absolutely not pure hybrids. No EVs.
No EVs.
And the product cycle, the nature of the product cycle has apparently dictated that the giant company that lives in Dearborn, Michigan has not
none.
A single entry.
None. Maybe we should read the list. Or are you?
Well, go ahead. Let's start with the cars, and maybe we should discuss that, and then we'll get into the trucks, and that'll maybe keep everything easier to keep track of.
So, for the car, nominees for Car of the Year on the short list are the BMW 4 Series, the Cadillac CTS, the Chevrolet Corvette Stingray, the Chevrolet Impala, the Infiniti Q50, the Jaguar F-Type, the Kia Cadenza, the Lexus IS, the Mazda 3, the Mazda 6, the Mercedes-Benz CLA, and the Toyota Corolla. A varied group, to say the least.
It's a big bandwidth there between something
Toyota
like
Corolla
and the
F-Type.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's the thing is, you know, early on in the days of the North American Car and Truck of the Year Award, it was all luxury cars that were winning it. And then I think the jury said, well, you know, what are we doing this for? You know, of course these are good cars. They're very expensive. And I think the thinking was, why don't we make this award more informative to the general public? And so we've had cars for a long time now, cars and trucks, that are pretty much within the new car buyer's range. But I wonder if this is a year where that's going to change. Because
Well, and then, too, we had not one but two Korean winners in a row. That never happened before, ever.
But there's still plenty on the list this year, too. So, you know, they have not. And I think that there's a couple interesting. We talked about the GM domination, but there's. I view this list as kind of some of the comeback kids because Jaguar's been not in a good place, and now it's got the F-Type, and it's on the list. Mazda's got two vehicles on the car list, and, you know, they've struggled a lot, too, and are kind of making a bit of a comeback.
Yeah, so they had the finalist last year in the CX-5 for crossover.
Right.
And that's a really great vehicle, but they've really gone back and fundamentally rethought the way they put together automobiles with the whole, I think, poorly named SkyActiv regime of technologies. But it's a total approach. I mean, it's really interesting from lightweighting of the platforms to more efficient drivetrains, new transmissions, and they're really, really exceptional to drive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and not with any kind of whiz-bang technology, just solid, basic engineering.
Six-speed automatic, but a great six-speed automatic.
Yeah. But even so, Jim, you're saying Corvette.
Well, it's not outlandishly expensive. It's $52,000 for your regular grocery-getter Corvette, which everywhere, every time I've seen one on the road, it just has people doing this. They love the way the thing looks. There was some initial backlash from the Corvette Puristi, but everybody just loves the way it looks. It goes like hell. It makes wonderful things on the skid pad. There's so much technology in the car, and it's $50,000.
And value is, regardless of what the price category is, value in that segment has always been one of the things that we look at as a jury, I think.
Yeah.
I think it has a
no,
very
it's
good
not
shot.
A hatchback. No, it doesn't hold more than two people, but it's an American icon, and it's back, and it's better than it's ever been, and it's $50,000.
Yes, and within the reach of still a lot of American people. Really.
Well, you know, for anybody who's in the market for an exotic, high-performance sports car, this is the cheapest one that you can buy,
right.
Really.
And,
right.
And not even just cheapest in terms of base price, but if you look at the options, I mean, if you go to the Germans, they charge you, they nickel and dime you for everything. If you want, you know, leather-covered air vents, you know, they'll charge you $500 for something like that, whether it's Porsche or BMW, and there's not much standard equipment. But with this car, it's got a lot, and then you can
and
get
it's
the...
it's packaged like an American car.
Yeah.
It's packaged. Normal, routine, check this box, you get all of these done.
Yeah, and then look at the Z51 performance package. I mean, you get dry sump, you know, you get bigger brakes. It's amazing the amount of technology you get for, I think, what is it, $2,300? It's a remarkable buy.
For the weekend racer, that's the one.
Yeah.
And the Puristi, as you call it, didn't like it because it doesn't have those round tail lamps. And I saw
get over it.
I know. I saw somebody who did an artist's rendition of what it would have looked like with round, and they said, "See, this is what we could have had." And I thought, "Dang, I like the real one better than the one with this round tail
layout."
Well,
there's so much going on with the rest of the design, and there's more surface development of this car than there has been in Corvettes in many generations. And I don't mind the tail lamps. I tell you what actually throws me off about the back end. It's the exhaust pipes. They're the only round elements back there. They're huge. They look like howitzers. And they just, they don't quite fit to me. The one thing I find, or that I think will be interesting, is there's so much going on with this car, especially with the Z51s, with the vents and all that stuff, is A, how will that design age? And B, how will they, you know, denote higher performance models when they inevitably come out? Because there's just so much to look at already.
Mm-hmm. So, Michelle, you mentioned Jaguar. How does the F-Type stack up against the Corvette?
Well, you know, it's certainly a breakthrough car for Jaguar, being, you know, a new, totally new model, first since, what, the E-Type? But I still think maybe it might be too niche for our jurors, perhaps. And it's in the stratosphere of, we were looking up the price. The base price is $69,000. And I'm sure you can get one.
V8 is more like 100.
81, right. Starts 81 and goes up from there. So.
And I would say that it's actually not a bad value relative to the rest of the class. Again, we're talking about the Germans before and how they nickel and dime you. And those cars come standard with stuff like power seats, navigation, and you know, keyless access. So it's well equipped and it's a gorgeous car, but it is really niche-y. And frankly, I think, you know, it's an automatic only, and it's all aluminum body, aluminum chassis, but it's not any lighter than the competitor, so I don't really know where that weight went.
Yeah, you're right. It's not that light of a car, not for having so much aluminum in it.
But it's gorgeous, as a Jaguar should be.
Sounds incredible. I mean, it's like God's voice coming out of the exhaust pipes. It's unbelievable.
Well, you know, it depends, because the V6 sounds very different than the 8, and mm-hmm. the 8 has different settings. You can put it in a full mode performance setting, or put it in a mud and snow setting, or
right.
normal,
right.
and you get three different exhaust notes
sure.
based on which setting that you've put it
and
in.
And I think the sweetheart is really the V6S, which is the middle model, and that has, you can get the switchable exhaust, and it still sounds fantastic. The V8, to me, I just was fortunate enough to have one, and I drove them all on the launch. And it's almost just too much car, because it's not a particularly small car. And, you know, if you're just going to drive it on the street and it's really not a track car, V6S.
Yeah, that's what everyone's saying. The V6 seems to be a better balance than, yeah. than having the 8, even though the 8's got gobs more power to it.
So the top management didn't elect to go with an inline 6 this time around.
I think the other interesting, there's an interesting car on the list, the Mercedes-Benz CLA. Now, I haven't driven it, as I've not driven quite a few of the cars on the list, because we talked about that there are a lot of vehicles coming in late this year. I think it's going to be interesting to see. The reviews so far have not been great on that car.
Not very good, no.
And,
I think it's too cheap, essentially, right?
Do you remember the ML? When they ventured into the
yes.
SUV business,
yes.
it was a pretty terrible vehicle.
It was built to a dealership window price, you know, in letters, mm-hmm. this numbers this big. And you could tell as soon as you got in the truck, oh, there's mouse fur all over the place. Mm-hmm. What did they do? And it was just not very good, but they built it to a price, and they have to have done the same thing. $29,900 for a Mercedes-Benz
automobile.
And
let me tell you, when they advertised that on the Super Bowl, we saw the shopping consideration. People were coming to our website looking at that car, and have for many months. So I'm real interested in seeing what happens once the reviews are out there, and you're seeing some of them now that aren't so
but
great.
It made the short list.
Yes,
whereas
it did.
Mercedes
well,
is coming out with this new S-Class, which is just this tour de force from a technological standpoint. And it didn't make the list.
I think that goes back to the point about the relevancy to the general consumer. I mean, this is a car that, as you said, everybody's interested in. The S-Class is in the stratosphere as far as price goes, especially for an award like this, where it's, you know, $90,000 with nothing in it. And you can very easily push it to $120,000, $130,000. It's an incredible car. I've had the chance to drive it. The amount of technology and, you know, the amount that they've taken from Maybach and they put in the interior is really something special. But is it germane to, you know, the average American car buyer? Probably not so much, unless you look at that car and think all those things that are in that car, from the semi-autonomous driving technology to the perfume dispenser, probably going to be in mainstream cars in 15 years.
Yeah.
And the CLA, God bless it. I mean, I think it looks really, really good. Mm-hmm. You put it on a turntable and look at it, watch it go around. It's got beautiful lines. And if you're coming out of a 5-year-old Dodge Charger and you've aspired to a Mercedes-Benz of some kind, and you say, well, okay, it's got this package, and it's now it's only $34,000, but it's a Mercedes. Then you climb in it. You don't know that the mouse fur is not the usual run of, mm-hmm. of C-Class, E-Class, S-Class interior quality. You've never been in one before
so it's a
in your life.
Car, hmm. conquesting from
exactly.
other.
Exactly.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. I mean, I'm sure people that are just looking at everyday family sedans, when the mileage is good, the power rating is good, the acceleration, the numbers are all there. I think it's maybe just falls down from what I understand in the experience of actually driving it.
And how much is the performance one?
Well, that's going to be a lot.
Ooh.
And, yeah, you know, you put the AMG letters on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I think
there's
right.
another $20,000 going on mm-hmm. the sticker
but
price.
But as Chris said, you know, you get in it and you get 30-something miles to the gallon, and it looks really cool in your driveway, and it's a Mercedes-Benz. And the last car in your driveway was a Dodge. People in the neighborhood are going, they're doing well.
Yeah, they are. Except that I think everybody else that owns a Mercedes is going to be thinking, oh, no, they're letting the riffraff into the brand. I think it's going to hurt them in the long run.
This is the third time they've done this. Do you remember the C Coupe?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look, I remember when the C Class first came out. Mm-hmm. It was the CLA all over mm-hmm. again. And, I'm telling you, luxury is a fine line between having something that people really aspire to, the right people with a lot of money aspiring to, rather than the masses aspiring and being able to get it.
Well, remember, too, that Mercedes is a full-line brand over in Europe and in other markets, right? From cradle to grave,
A-class,
they get you. From A-class up to Sprinter.
Yeah.
So they cover all segments of the market. They're going to sell that car all over the place. It's, you know, in a way, it's a corporate average fuel economy play. That'll help there. And I think it'll get new people into the brand. The you know, Mercedes brand is a storied mark, but it does have sort of a traditional sort of older clientele that it is historically played to. They feel like they need to attract younger people. This is a prime way of doing it.
We'll see if that works, because I really wonder if the Mercedes brands... I talk to young people, and they think it's an old, you know, brand for older mm-hmm. people. We'll see if they can really make any inroads.
And apparently the back seat is for shorter people. Some of the early reviews that I've seen said there's not much room back
yeah,
there.
But right. there's not much it's back room, kids, back seat room in a C-Class or a 3 Series. It's never been a top priority of cars that are even a little bit larger.
Meanwhile, as Mercedes is trying to go down market under $30,000, Cadillac doesn't have to do that at all. It's got Chevrolet and Buick to go mm-hmm. play around in that. And, you know, this new CTS, I think, looks awfully good.
It sure does. Sure does. I haven't driven it yet, but it looked beautiful at the auto shows. You know, I have to. And then it's interesting how they've moved it up more towards the BMW 5 Series in every way, and including price, now that they have the ATS to slide in under that.
Well, so. It shows the maturity of the lineup to mm-hmm. me and the confidence that GM has in Cadillac, because the original CTS, in fact, the first two generations were in between the 3 and the 5 mm-hmm. Series, because they frankly didn't have the money and to invest in two separate vehicles. So now they've got a really good ATS. And
which was last year's winner, by the way, we
correct.
Should note.
Yeah, right.
And now they have the ability to push it up market and try and command more money for it. And it does look like a really nice vehicle.
The thing that impresses me is, even though it's a bigger vehicle, it's lighter than the one it's replacing. And it's several hundred pounds lighter model for model line than the 5 Series it goes up against. Mm-hmm. So it's not only a good-looking car, they've done some really good engineering on the thing. You know, we had David Leone last week from... the executive chief engineer on the car talking all about it.
Who's been with it through the whole, he's been through with Cadillac for so long and through all the generations. So
remember,
that's exactly right.
We were all together with him when he said, we went all over the ATS looking for grams,
mm-hmm.
down to gram weight saving level, and it works. Now they know how to do it. They can do it again and again and know that they're going to pass crash and not have any problems, and just roll.
Well, you said, I think they're saying is 1 gram by every engineer every day. That's how they're taking the weight down. Every engineer every day has got to figure out how to take another gram out of the car, which, you know, you spread that over a couple of years, and that's a lot of grams.
Mm-hmm. It is.
It'll be interesting to see, you know, the way the jury votes in terms of CTS and Corvette and...
speaking of luxury cars, Infiniti Q50, and mm-hmm. you know, this is an interesting car. They've got a new head designer, Alfonso Albaiza, at Infiniti. They're trying to de-Americanize the brand, because really it only sold in this country for most of its life. Now they're trying to take it global.
Renaming
everything.
Q. Yes, right. Q or QX if it's an SUV.
Sorry. And only V6 and V8s. Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Not much in the way of turbocharging
turbo
and DI and all of that.
Do that.
I've driven the Q50, and it's an interesting vehicle, in part because we've always liked the G37 because of the way it drives.
Which it replaces.
Correct. And the standard car still drives like a G37, but one with a nicer interior, mm-hmm. I think more dynamic looking. It's a really nice car. And then if you start to load it up on technologies, they've got the first steer-by-wire system in the entire industry in a production car. And, you know, they claim that it, you know, filters out road noise and disturbances and tram lining and all that sort of stuff. And I suppose it does that, but it also filters out all the feedback that you're supposed to get.
Mm. What Infiniti was known for from the beginning.
I think you're being too harsh there. It filters out a lot. But you get feedback through the wheel. However, I will say I spent a lot of time in both the steer-by-wire car, and you can get a normal with a shaft to the wheels kind of a thing. and the regular normal to the shaft car does feel better.
It's better. And I think it's also interesting that they're keeping the G37 on the market with the name G37, despite the fact that all the other cars are switched to this new Q naming scheme, in part because they still don't have that entry-level engine, and they're seeing a lot of action around the low end for the 3 Series, like the 320i, and they need a car to compete there. So they're bringing out a successor, but they're keeping them both in the showroom for a couple of years. It's really unusual.
It's probably not a smart move, but, you know, sometimes you have a great strategy and you don't have the hardware to quite pull it off yet. So I understand what they're doing, but I don't think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
I love the way it looks.
The Q50, excuse me.
Everybody else doesn't seem to be able to do bulbous, and I mean that in the kindest possible way. It just has this amazing front to rear flow to it. I've looked at it again and again. I've seen the commercials, and it just goes flying by. That's a pretty car, aside from all the technical goodies.
Right. What do you all make of the Chevy Impala? It's been getting all kinds of accolades.
Speaking of value and style. I mean, I think that really told us that GM's still got some design mojo, especially for, you know, just ordinary cars. I think the interesting thing with that is they've got to do a really good marketing job in terms of getting retail customers instead of, you know, it used to be over 70% fleet sales for that car, and now they've got to shift that to quite the opposite equation.
But consumer reports rated it as one of its best cars, and you know, and same with the Silverado. We'll get to that discussion in a minute, too, on the truck side. But, I mean, I can't ever remember in my entire life when two Chevys were so highly recommended by Consumer Reports.
No. Yeah.
I think they said it was one of their top-rated sedans ever.
Yeah.
You know, in a vehicle like that in particular, I would argue that it's really important to get those sort of Consumer Reports-friendly things, you know, get the ergonomics right. Get the NVH right and all of that. In a sports car, something like that, you're willing to accept a few quirks and all of that as character. But in a car like that, you really need it to sort of be by the numbers good, and I think that car is.
And it's beautiful.
Really,
it turns
really out. Quiet at 80 miles an hour on the freeway. I don't know how they did it, but it's just a wonderful piece to take on a long ride. It's the family sedan. Yeah. It's a terrific car.
It's not in a segment that doesn't do very well. I mean, we talk about EVs and hybrids being a niche part of the market. The large car segment now is the same size as that part of the market. So it's just been downhill.
But there's so much development in that segment this year, right? And last year, we have a new Avalon, a new Azera, which is not doing well.
No.
Which I think is a perfectly nice car. The Cadenza.
Avalon's doing terrific.
Yeah, the Avalon's doing well. And the Maxima has always made a ton of money for Nissan. And there's a new one coming shortly.
Uh-huh. We'll see if there's any
funny,
light.
Nobody said anything about the Taurus.
Well, there is the...
Well, there's a new one of them coming Monday, too, I'm sure. And we've got a couple of entry-level cars, too, the Mazda 3 and the Toyota Corolla. Have any of you been in those cars? I have not.
I have been in the Mazda 3.
Me, too. What a little sweetie.
It is.
I agree with what Chris said earlier. They went almost back to a molecular level of vehicle development and said, all right, hold it. Here we are in Hiroshima all by our little selves. What are we not doing? Let's talk about I'm an engine nut, as you know, and the whole badly named Sky Active thing has nothing to do with the sky. No signals come down to the engine from a satellite, and there's no active suspension or anything, but they call it Sky Active. They did such a great job redesigning the internal combustion engine to operate at very high compression ratios. In Europe, it's 14 to 1. That's just nuts.
That's nobody, race car technology.
Absolutely.
And then the handling on top of it. I mean, they've always been so good at handling and nimbleness, which is... Yeah. I think it makes it one of the best in the class.
They're sort of the forgotten brand when you think about the Japanese as a value play and all that. Enthusiasts love them, but they just don't sell in big numbers. And I really hope that these cars do well. I think there've been one or two areas in which they haven't really been as competitive as you'd like in the past, namely the interior and maybe in some of the infotainment technology. And even though these cars are both 2014 model years, the Mazda 6 has a very nice interior, but it doesn't quite have the infotainment there. And the Mazda 3, which came a little bit later, does. And we'll start to see that trickle on through the lineup. And I think they both should be really fantastic vehicles. I actually had an engineer from a direct competitor tell me, you know what, those guys do such great work over there, I would happily give them 50,000 units just so they could continue building cars like that. Which, I mean, how often do you hear something like that?
Yeah, you never hear that. And I think that the 3 and the 6 could do well, and I'm just basing that on the CX-5 mm-hmm. crossover, mm-hmm. which yes. sales-wise has done a yeoman's job for the Mazda brand. It's mm-hmm. done terrific for them.
They've been talking a little bit about some shortages already in terms of availability.
Since the start. It's
yeah,
been,
so.
A lot of shortages.
Hey, why don't we get into the trucks? I know we didn't cover everything on the car list, but we need to save time for...
And we have to remember it's not just truck anymore, it's utility.
And utility, that's right. So, Ben, let's give a shout-out to our friends at Bridgestone Firestone.
There's only one car company in America that's never made a single car. And while you won't find Firestone cars on any showroom floor, they're out there, running better, faster, stronger, longer. No, we don't build cars. Make no mistake, Firestone is a car company. So whatever you drive, drive a Firestone.
AutoLine offers you one of the most effective ways to get your marketing message in front of the decision makers in the global automotive industry. Contact Stacy Eamon today.
Okay, the truck side of the business, or utility, as
it
Michelle
has to be both.
Says. It's And boy, did we have the argument over the years.
We always do.
Big arguments whether we could
include utilities, finally.
What is a utility?
By name.
Yeah, and what is a utility? And how is that different from a crossover? So, I mean, we've got 50 jurors, and everyone's got pretty much their own idea of how that should be. Nonetheless, we included utility.
Yes, we did.
Well, I'm running late, so I say again, Silverado, I have to go. It's the only truck in the running.
And this, and the jury tends to like real trucks. When
Ram
there is one.
One, too.
Ram won last year. So I think it's probably a pretty good bet.
Wouldn't surprise me at all. I think it's interesting that when those two vehicles, the Sierra and the Silverado, came out, and both are on the list, by the way, when they came out, we all looked at the spec sheets and all of that, and we looked at the design of the vehicles, and we're like, did they really do enough? Because we've been seeing a lot of innovation in terms of forced induction in power plants and in suspensions and all of that, and they didn't seem to kind of work on paper, but then you get in one and you see the refinement, you see how quiet they are, you see how mature the ride is, and you see that they get good fuel economy and they deliver the payloads and all that. It's a much better vehicle than it pencils out as.
It doesn't raise the bar hugely, but I think it does enough.
Well, and that's going to be interesting because...
We'll see next year when the F-Series comes out.
Right. Well, there's an F-Series coming out. They didn't come out with a diesel or a multi-speed transmission.
No turbo to counteract, EcoBoost and
right.
Ford.
So, I mean, it's a very impressive vehicle. I agree that I'm not sure it raises the bar, though, because the Ram is a really great pickup. The F-150 is behind in cadence, and I don't know that it's fair to really compare it to those, although consumers can and should look at everything. So I don't know. I mean, I think there's some room in there for some other vehicles.
Well, to me, I even today have a hard time looking at the new Chevy Silverado and going, is that the new one or the old one?
Yep.
And I have to look for the notch in the chin spoiler, and I got to be able
and
to see
the little footstep in the back.
The footstep or the windshield wipers down below the collar. I shouldn't have to be looking at stuff like that to find out if this is the new one. Now, exactly what you guys said.
Oh.
You get in and you drive it, and I've driven them all, both, back to back, the old one, the new one, the old one, the new one, the old. The new one is a much better
truck.
Oh,
absolutely.
There's no question. But
there you go, John. Subtlety has arrived in the American pickup truck.
I'll tell you.
Hidden wipers. They did, at the launch, they talked an awful lot about aero. I mean, mm-hmm. when you have something that big, it's like the Cadillac engineers going around looking for grams. The pickup guys are looking at aero counts everywhere they can. I'm sorry, this is a great mirror, but it's way too big.
The new ones look like locomotives because they sit so low to the ground, but they're huge. Yeah. I had one with, it was actually a 4x2, but with the off-road suspension package, and I was shocked at how low it was. And it's primarily that removable chin spoiler. But it is surprising how much they're putting aero into these trucks.
But, you know, we've seen this happen before when the same company with different brands puts two vehicles out there. So we got the Silverado and the GMC Sierra. And I think that's going to split the vote and hurt both of them. We've seen it happen in the past.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, most people will probably go, okay, Chevy's the bigger selling one. I'll put my votes there if I want to vote for the truck. Enough people will go, nope, that GMC Sierra, the styling on it is so much better, I'm going with that one instead.
So who could sneak in? We didn't read the list.
Well, why don't you read the list? Yes.
So it's Acura MDX, BMW X5, Buick Encore, Chevrolet Silverado, GMC Sierra, Hyundai Santa Fe, I guess the long wheelbase one.
Right.
Jeep Cherokee, Kia Sorento, Land Rover Range Rover Sport, Nissan Rogue, Subaru Forester, and Toyota Tundra. So who could sneak in?
I'll tell you, in my book, that Acura MDX is a knockout good vehicle. In fact, it rides more like a big American sedan from the 70s than anything else that's being built today, including the other big American sedans that we were talking about. Mm. I think Acura nailed what the American consumer is looking for in that kind of utility vehicle. I don't know if it's going to be on the winner or make the finalist list, but in my book, from what I've driven so far this year, that's one of the more impressive vehicles.
Well, and I think sales-wise, that thing's going to do great because it's got a huge following anyway. It's a very popular family vehicle. So,
and for a brand that generally struggles to make a lot of noise, it's a really good one. They need that vehicle to sell. I'm not crazy about the new infotainment system.
Neither.
The twin screen system, and it's a little convoluted in operation with the haptic feedback.
You know what puzzles me is, I would say 4 or 5 years ago, I thought Acura had the best interface.
Yeah. They had from the start, and then I found this one really.
They lost it, or everybody caught up and went past them. I'm not sure which.
Their first navigation system was
class leading. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. It was industry leading, really.
Yeah.
I still have one of the older, I have a newer Acura myself, and I still have that same infotainment system in it. And it's simple, it works. It's mm-hmm. graphically not that impressive, and you can't integrate a whole lot of other things, but it's
intuitive.
But it works.
Easy.
Yeah.
And then there was the Jeep Cherokee.
Speaking of,
starting at a mere $23,000, and it doesn't quite look like a Jeep anymore. So
I'm not buying that. I think it really looks like a Jeep. I haven't driven it, so I don't know how it does, ride and handling wise and whatever. And they certainly are having some struggles getting it into the market. But I think the purists are sometimes off on some of these things.
I got to admit, it's kind of growing on me. When I first saw it, I went, ooh, that's not very good.
I liked it. I thought it was cool instantly.
From the beginning?
So did I.
And I saw one coming from behind me.
When they released that first photo, three-quarter front facing that way, I went, all right. Sounds like the Renault boys have been in the Jeep studio.
I had one following me some months ago, long before it was out on the streets, and I looked in the rearview mirror. I knew exactly what that was.
It's one of those designs that's really sensitive to trim. You've mm-hmm. got the Trailhawk that's running up mm-hmm. there, and I think that looks pretty boss. I mean, I think that looks pretty great with the bigger wheels and tires, a little more ground clearance. It's more assertive. But if you look at a lot of the vehicles, and we've been seeing them here in Detroit running around for many, many, many months, and if you look at some of the volume trim models with the smaller wheels and tires and some of the more meek colors, it doesn't really work to me. And the thing design-wise that's interesting about it is the nose. And then I feel like from, the A-pillar on back, they sort of mailed it in. Because it could be almost any other vehicle from that point back, especially in the lower trims. But it's really interesting in terms of the amount of capability that vehicle
looks
offers.
It's a little like an Escape going away.
Yeah.
It does. The taillights.
But, I mean, we sit here and we don't know what's going to be out there in the not-too-distant future when the law comes and says you have to have pedestrian protection even if it's a light truck. So maybe the hood can't be like this anymore, straight up and down. You have to do something to protect the pedestrians.
That's a good point. I hadn't
thought
of that.
That's exactly what they did. They tipped over a Jeep nose, and now it Doesn't look quite like a Jeep, but it's a Jeep.
And I think it'll do well in the marketplace because
I think so too.
Because that segment has a lot of good competitors. You've got Escape and CRV and things like that. And I sound terrible saying this, but they're a little girly. And so here you have a Jeep, and every young kid aspires to a Jeep. And this is one that they can, you know, it's not a Wrangler. They parents won't get all freaked out if they own one, and it's more practical for their needs. I just think it'll do well.
I hadn't thought about that, Michelle, but that's a really good point. I think that, you know, the old Escape, which was really boxy, even though it was a crossover, still had a certain, you know, SUV-like look to it and a masculinity, if you will. And it sold like crazy for years. I mean, that thing printed money. It was an ancient design, but they just kept rolling it out there, and it did really well. And that's there's sort of a vacuum now that they've gone to that more aero and sleeker shape.
And so this is unique in the segment, I think. Mm-hmm. It offers a different proposition.
And like you say, Chris, I think it's very sensitive to trim levels, because I saw one in the parking lot the other day that looked really good to my eye. And after I've been trashing the way it looks, I went, oh, geez, that one looks really good. So,
well, they got to get all the bugs worked out in the manufacturing process, and they have a new 9-speed in it that they're having, I understand, some tuning issues with the dogleg clutches and all of that. So a lot of us haven't had the chance to drive them yet because they pushed back the launch. Will that impact the way that the voting goes?
Yeah. And that's like some of the other ones that Michelle was mentioning. That shape can be very color sensitive, too. Mm-hmm. If you get a bright yellow, you go, whoa. But a darker color?
But there's a sameness. I'll never forget having, I had an Escape, and it was parked next to a CRV that was the same color. It's like you walk up and, wow, they look really the same.
You have to
and
get
so
the key fob out to see which one you're driving.
So, you know, so then you have something in that category that's not that, and it's with such a strong brand. I mean, Jeep is such a powerful brand. I just think it's a new proposition in the segment.
They messed around. I almost said a bad word. They messed around with names that some marketing dude came up with, Commander and Liberty. What a waste of time and money that all was. Mm-hmm. They had the Cherokee name sitting there ready to go, and they didn't use it. Big mistake.
Yeah.
But now it's back, and I think it's pretty good. Looking forward to driving one, as we all are, I guess.
What do you all think, sort of at the opposite end of the spectrum, is the Hyundai Santa Fe long wheelbase? Because here I test drove it, and I thought, this is a perfectly good vehicle. It nails exactly what it's supposed to do. It's well put together. It drives well. It's priced properly. But it just didn't stir my soul at all.
You reach into the container with your scoop, and out comes vanilla. Mm-hmm. It has all the proper attributes, but doesn't move my needle.
Well, let's also admit that segment, you know, the three-row crossover, is not the most intrinsically sexy of segments. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of same in there, and it's function over form, and it's a perfectly nice vehicle. But I don't know in particular if that three-row really moves the needle within the class, and I also don't know how much people are going to be swayed because they probably won't think to remember it too much.
Yeah, that's what I think. I mean, you know, perfectly good vehicle. No one who buys one, I think, is going to make a bad decision, but I'm not sure it's, you know, truck or utility
and
of the year.
It does have a following. This is the third generation Santa Fe by now.
But this one's different. Remember, you know, the two-row came out last year. So this is, you know, it's a different platform. It's very much a different vehicle than what we drove a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Significantly different. Yeah. But, you know, rather than create a new name and have to market.
Which smart marketing.
I think it's very smart of what the way they've done it.
Well, the Santa Fe, as you were saying, Jim, has name brand recognition at this point. And you remember they tried a three-row crossover fairly recently, the Veracruz.
Oh, yeah.
And it didn't move at all. And we all think of Hyundai and Kia as these companies where they have hit after hit after hit.
But they don't.
Same with Toyota, but they don't always. And the Veracruz, perfectly nice vehicle, but failed to move the needle. And I think if you can leverage that, you know, name and that styling and it doesn't cost you as much to build, why not?
And speaking of Toyota, there's a new pickup, new Tundra on the list.
New.
Ugliest pickup in history, made by anybody, anywhere.
Wow, that's harsh.
Oh, I thought that was the old one.
Somebody somewhere in the design center said, if 17 bars across the grill is good, how about 30? It just keeps climbing up and up and up. I'm sorry, I don't care for it. I wouldn't own one of those on a bet. Ugly.
And there really, is there that?
Yes, I'm sure it has torque and towing and all the rest of it, but you have to look at it when you walk out from your house. It's just, sorry, not me.
See, I can see where you don't like it, but I do think it's an improvement over the model it replaces. I didn't like the styling of the prior generation.
And you like this one better, huh?
To me, this looks better. It looks cleaner. It looks more modern than the old sort of swarthy, you know, scowling look of the Tundra. This one looks more machine.
His nostrils
more
like Godzilla.
I'm going to agree with John here. I think it does look better, but it doesn't really move the needle. And to me, I'm a little surprised, honestly, that it made it on the list. And I think it's one of those provisions that since not everybody has driven everything,
we gave it the
benefit of the doubt, which is what we are instructed to do to get to this point on the list. But the fact is, there's really no new driveline technology. All they've done is a facelift. And it's a facelift on a vehicle that has been largely uncompetitive, both, you know, in terms of payload and dynamics and sales. So I think it's kind of a red herring.
Interesting way of looking at it. Subaru Forester.
I'm driving one right now.
It's a good vehicle.
It is.
But is it utility of the year material?
Not so sure about that.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that either. No. There's so much what I like about the Forester. You know, always the all-wheel drive capability, the fuel, it's got a CVT, gets terrific real-world fuel efficiency
in it. Pack so much stuff in it.
You can pack a lot, and the all-wheel drive system, I mean, they gave us this one demonstration where you had to clamber up this slippery ramp that they were hosing down while you did it, and this thing just walked right up there like it was nothing. But on the other hand, I've never really liked the styling of Subaru vehicle. Oh, here we're going to go up the ramp here. Ben's running this clip, and so it's a very low mu surface, and you can see the wheels, you know, they make you stop, and look, the thing even starts to slide back down. That's how slippery it is, and then they tell you to go, and it's like all these wheels are going at different speeds, and it just walks right up this ramp. It's really impressive, but again, I don't think the styling is anything to write home about. The interior is very plain, you know.
But Subaru has been amazing.
They did not notice
there was a recession. They just marched through, and year after year after year of record sales.
I had an XT about 3 weeks or so ago, and I just loved it, just driving it around, knowing that if the floods came, I'm getting home. Right. Not a problem. Not that I go off-road a lot, but I mean, and that's
why you buy a Subaru.
One of the essences of Subaru's whole ethic. We will get you home, or we will get the kids to school and back, no problem.
And to the antique shop.
And that's one of the cool things. They sponsor the Antiques Roadshow. Because they know their people flop the seats down and buy desks every weekend. It's as honest as the day is long, and it's $23,000. Mm-hmm. Let me check my notes. $22,000 to start.
Yeah, it's hard. They'll sell a ton of them.
When you start rolling value into these trucks here, I agree. The initial remarks about the MDX. Boy, is it slick and wonderful. But it's $20,000 more than the Subi.
Yeah.
Different kettle of fish. I mean, I think
it's way more luxurious inside. But if you need a mom mobile for your family to operate that's going to be here 25 years from now.
Hard to beat.
I mean, their long-term durability is amazing. They just run and run and run, and I love it. I think it's really neat. But it's in the same running as the Silverado.
Yeah.
We know how you're voting.
You already chose that.
Well, how about the Buick Encore? That, when that was shown at the auto shows a couple of years ago, that was very controversial. People thought it wouldn't sell. It's selling very well.
Uh-huh.
I don't think that it's of the year quality, but I think it's been an interesting entry into a segment that really didn't exist, and I think we'll see more and more of those kind of very small, very premium kind of vehicles, and yet that's got a very affordable price tag as well.
Yeah. It is. I don't think it's a premium enough vehicle.
Yeah, the engine's pretty sluggish.
And the back seat, the front seat's not too bad. You know, what mm-hmm. the driver looks, sees, and touches is not bad. But you get in the back seat, and boy, you could see where the value analysis engineers had a field day. They took a lot of cost out of the thing.
Well, and remember, too, it plays as other vehicles in other markets. I mean, it's the Chevy Trax, right. It's the Opel Mokka, lower-end vehicles. And the underpinnings are not the same, but shared with the Sonic, right? It's on the small, wide architecture. Mm-hmm. So at least the learnings are from that, and the drivetrains are from that. So I agree, Michelle. It's underpowered. But I think it's really interesting where I think most of us journalists sort of were like, well, I don't know how well that's going to be work out.
But I knew it would, because I think it's aimed at an audience like me.
Yeah.
Empty nester woman who, wants something small to get about town. I had a lot of women interested in that mm-hmm. when I drove it. So,
yeah, it has all of the Buick-ness mm-hmm. from the back of the front seat all the way to the front tip of the hood. It looks like all the others in the showroom. It's got Buick-ness. I think they did a beautiful job on the interior. And if you don't have to be in the back seat.
Well, and I suspect not a lot of people do ride in the back seat. I bet it's driven by,
mostly
one person.
But Buick's a red-hot brand right now. They're doing terrifically well, and the Encore is a reason.
With all their new products.
With all their new products.
I was just going to say that.
Regal
can't get out of its own sales way.
And it doesn't help that they introduced a car like the Verano that's pretty close in size on the interior and the exterior. And it's a better car to drive.
Yeah.
And I think they reached a little too far too soon in terms of price on cars like that. They've been able to transact well, I think, with the Encore because it's a different type of vehicle. But I don't think Buick as a brand has cachet yet. I mean, they want to be that sort of near premium wasteland that has like parts of Acura in it and all that.
Lincoln.
But it's, but Lincoln wants to get out of there.
Yeah,
and these guys are just trying to get in on the ground floor. And frankly, I mean, it's a perfectly fine vehicle, but the Regal's not terribly exciting.
Two other vehicles then on the list, the Kia Sorento and the Nissan Rogue.
And I went the BMW X5, we haven't yet said.
Oh, we haven't talked about that either.
Or the Land Rover.
There you go.
Well, yeah, there's a number of them.
Okay.
Where do you want to
X5.
Start?
X5. Looks just like the last one and the one before that.
And most
one
of it's
before
the
that,
same.
The one before that.
Yes. Which was a breakthrough vehicle when it came out.
Where's the 9-speed? Where is, I don't know.
They didn't need to. I mean, they've got top of mind, with the luxury crossover shoppers. It sells real well. I'm sure it makes a ton of money for them. It's built here in the States. And
not the X5. The X3 is built here in the States.
Oh,
the
I'm sorry. Yeah. And I think they've got that pretty well sewn up. They didn't need to change the formula a whole lot.
I suppose they didn't, but so, it's always been a big, heavy vehicle.
The corollary to that is, what the hell is it doing on the list?
Yeah.
But it's basically a new vehicle. It just happens to look the same. I mean, the same thing could be said, for the Kia Sorento, which looks almost exactly the same.
Yes.
And people are referring to that as a facelift. It's not. It's a whole new platform underneath. But
it
you look at it, and
that.
It doesn't look like it.
Doesn't feel it.
No, I'd agree with that.
Well, it's pretty apparent that there's as much craziness going on the truck and utility side as there is on the passenger car side this year. Mm. Lots of ups and downs and ins and outs. This is all going to be very interesting when we
get and again,
to the next
level. Part of it too is that we're still a little bit early in the process, so I know there's quite a few of these I haven't driven yet.
And next week is our big drive, so we go out and test
drive
everything.
The jury, or much of the jury, gets together to drive all these vehicles.
And I don't know if your audience.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it just happens to be in Michigan.
Go figure.
And then, we should remind, anything can happen with the way we do the points, because we assign the 25, we have 25 points to assign to cars, 25 points to trucks, and that can.
And you can only give, what, 10?
10 most.
10.
Only one vehicle.
Of your 20, you have to vote all 25 points, but yes. You can only give 10 to one vehicle.
Right.
So that forces us to spread our votes around, and it's whoever gets the most points wins. And it's a pretty good system.
And it's, you know, this is our 20-something, 23rd
really?
Year. And when you see all of us in one room at the same time, which very rarely happens outside of an auto show, you say, oh, well, there's John. He's from Minneapolis. He's going to have a certain set of values because he's from Minneapolis. And then there's a whole cluster from here in Detroit. And then there's the L.A. contingent,
the
South Florida guys.
Mm-hmm.
South Florida guys, they don't care about all-wheel drive or four-wheel drive. They just don't care about it.
Right.
That's a place for flash, for F-type. Mm. And but the way that it all works out, I think, is a marvelous thing that we all have our own prejudices and our own experiences.
Gee, like the consumer. The
yes.
consumers of America mm-hmm. are all different.
Well, that's why the automakers have put so much importance on this award. Because they see it is 50 different people from the U.S. and Canada, mm-hmm. remember, our mm-hmm. Canadian colleagues, men and women, you know, younger and older, mm. and in hardcore enthusiasts to
business
not so
journalists.
Hard business. So it's a great mixture of viewpoints, and because of the point system, probably the best vehicle does emerge to be the winner in both car and truck.
So I was right then. Corvette, Silverado.
You can't give all 25 points to the...
No,
to
no.
Yeah, where are your secondary points going?
And, yeah.
That'll be interesting. I actually have a Range Rover Sport right now. It's parked right outside your studio, and I think that's a pretty tremendous vehicle. I don't think it'll move the needle for the voting because of the price, you know, that it competes in. But we were talking earlier about Mazda and their sort of holistic approach. Land Rover has done the same thing now. I mean, I think they lost 600-800 pounds out of that vehicle going to an all aluminum architecture, and just the whole package. I mean, it sings, it drives beautifully. They still have the old navigation system that's slow and all of that. But really, you can go anywhere in that whether you're going to the Metropolitan Opera or you're traversing the desert, and it does it all. And it's a beautiful car. It's got a downsized V6 in the one that I'm driving. It's supercharged, but plenty of power. It's a sweetheart.
To refresh my memory, didn't the Evoque win?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it did.
Mm-hmm. That was last year, year before.
2 years ago.
2 years ago. So it's...
it's laughable. This little tiny British company struggled for decades upon decades, and an Indian investor comes along,
right.
turns the whole joint upside down, and has a winner. First time out.
Right.
It's reverse
right.
colonialism.
Well, yeah, it is. But, you know, a couple of things. Much of the groundwork was, you know, being done before...
By BMW and Ford.
Well, Ford especially, before Tata showed up. And while their sales are up, we don't see their financials.
Right.
I'm not sure this company's making money yet. So I love the direction that they're going in. You know, I think Jaguar is doing the right thing. Look, the F-Type's on the
But they've struggled list. In sales, I mean, especially in the U.S., which should be a big market.
Well, and within the last 2 years, they four-wheel-drived all of the sedans, which I think was an important thing to do. Mm-hmm. They finally got around to doing that. Everybody else in the business had all-wheel drive but Jaguar.
And they were almost an all-V8 brand.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Now we're about to see four-cylinder turbos.
Fours and sixes, and it's pretty impressive.
And a Jaguar Ute at some point.
Yeah, too far away.
That'll be on our list.
That's right. Crossover.
Mm. Excuse me, yes.
But, so Jag's doing a lot, but I sure would like to see their financials because, as you guys know, you know, it's like, oh, very nice car. Now cough up the next billion for the new one that you're going to have mm-hmm. to pay to replace it. It's just a business that, boy, does it go through the cash. So I'm not sure Jaguar is quite there yet from a financial standpoint, but from a product standpoint, JLR is doing a lot right.
Yeah.
If only more people would notice. It's the same thing with Mazda, right? I mean... A lot of great product, maybe not enough sales, maybe the marketing is not quite there the way you need it to be, or just...
Or not loud enough, or...
Yeah, I know, but enough. Then, you know, we talk about Subaru. They're half the size of Mazda. Mm-hmm. But who would know? I mean, they're just charging ahead. Like you said, Michelle, they didn't even know there was a great recession going on.
But they do brilliant advertising, too. They do fabulous advertising and marketing, and, you know.
They know their customers.
They know their customers.
Say the same thing. I don't know exactly what happened out there in agency land, but this, the new approach that they've taken at Mazda for the six specifically, where the commercial starts with Thomas Edison or some other high achiever, and then the next thing you see is a Mazda 6. They're telling people, we went back down to a molecular level and we redesigned our car, and look at it. Look how pretty it is.
Well, their ads aren't quite memorable enough for me to remember.
Yeah.
Well,
Subaru
ads, I do. Well, you've been out of the country. So.
I think the other interesting thing about going back to Subaru is that the market sort of come to them, right? I mean, they were always doing this offbeat, all-wheel drive thing in their cars and the crossovers. They were early into that. And so maybe they didn't have great sales then, but you're getting records more and more because you're having a segment that's only, you know, exploding. Your compact crossovers, I mean, look at the numbers. They're incredible, and they're only going to get more so. And they have great vehicles. I mean, they're robust, they're solid, they're simple. For me personally, I look at something like the Forester, and it doesn't move the needle for me that much. The interior refinement's not there, and the styling hasn't been there, but I don't think that I almost feel like Subaru is immune to styling. You know what I mean?
Yes,
like
it doesn't matter. That's not
with the exception of the Tribeca, like they could do whatever they want.
That's right.
I tried to tell them, do not call it B9. It doesn't mean the same thing in the United States. B9 means it's just laying there. Come on, fellas. B9
it's not
Tribeca.
Cancerous.
And there's a company that was awfully late into the sedan business.
But they're still, you know, the Legacy, perfectly nice vehicle, not selling very well, if you look relative to the class. So there are some areas where they don't succeed that well. But in the crossovers, they've got it nailed.
They do. Yeah. They do. Hey, we ought to wrap it up here. This is going to be fascinating to see what we think 2 months from now, because 2 months from now, we'll probably have been through everything and really have had a chance to think it through. So I can't wait to see who we vote on for car and truck. I know Jim's already picked it. You know, it's the Silverado, and he might
be
there.
The conversation had to start somewhere, so I thought I would just
throw
that out there.
And I think he could be right.
It wouldn't surprise me. I could see something like the CTS garnering a few votes and maybe a Mazda 3, but I think you're probably right.
This is the earliest I remember thinking, you know, maybe we've got it nailed early, but I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see. We can always be surprised.
So I want everybody who's watching right now to know next week I'll still be out of town, but Peter DeLorenzo will be back here. He'll have a whole round table, including Jim Hall, Todd Lassa, and Scott Burgess. The week after that, that's going to be October 24th, we have Mike Swears, who's the chief engineer for the Toyota Tundra. He'll have the truck in here. The week after that, October 31st.
I guess I'm not invited to that one.
We'll have Mitch Claw, the vehicle line engineer for the Jeep Cherokee, which hopefully will be out in showrooms by then. And then on November 7th, we're going to have Taj Yuchter, the chief engineer for the Corvette here. So stay tuned. We've got some great shows coming up. But for now, I got to thank Chris Pockert from Autoblog for having been here.
Thank you. Always great to be here.
Yeah, Michelle Krebs from Edmunds.com,
exactly,
us to say. And Jim McCraw, who's, boy, you're with everybody,
I'm
right?
Just old.
Good. I needed somebody here older than me, but great having you here, Jim.
That was easy.
I want to thank all of you for having tuned in.
AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily news fix with AutoLine Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with AutoLine This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.